It is the morning show. What a privilege to spend the hour with Emmy Award-winning journalist Maria Hinojosa. You may know her voice from Latino USA. It airs Tuesday nights here at 10. She points her microphone toward people who often have no voice in our country. Maria's family moved from Mexico City to the U.S. in 1962 when Maria was just a little baby. And this was a time, Maria writes, when our country was once again redefining its relationship with immigrants. President John F. Kennedy was the grandson of Irish Catholic immigrants and embodied a new perspective when he spoke out about pilgrims and immigrants. What concerns you about U.S. immigration policy today and through the generations? Conversation is right here at 800-642-1234. Maria Hinojosa's new book is called Once I Was You, a memoir of love and hate in a torn America. Maria, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
So great to be with you. Hello, everyone. I love Wisconsin.
No, I know you do. And Maria, take us back to 1962, coming across the border with your mother and your siblings. You were going to meet your father in Chicago. What happened when you went through customs in Dallas?
So the way I hear this story the first time is when I wrote my first memoir about becoming a mom. It's called Raising Raul. And I realized that I had to kind of get the story right. So my mom told me, so I was already a mother when I got the more detailed version of this story. And this is the way I used to tell it, which was that my mother, we were flying from Mexico City through Dallas, change planes in Dallas, go through immigration, and then end up in Chicago, where my father was at the University of Chicago. he was, may he rest in peace, he was a genius. He helped to create the cochlear implant. And so that's why he was recruited to go to the University of Chicago. And so we all had green cards when we were coming in. And the way that I had been told the story originally was that, you know, this immigration agent kind of was inspecting us. And he says to my mom, you know, the baby, we needed to put her into quarantine. And that my mother in that moment, you know, stands up and she basically says to this very tall Texan immigration agent, oh, you know, you can't take my daughter and blah, 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 blah. And I gave speeches for a long time where this was like the big story. And it was like, and then my mother stood up and pointed her finger to the immigration agent and said, no, you know, my husband is at the University of Chicago. You can't do this. And then he said, okay, come on in. And everybody would applaud and be like, oh, and I would be, and I thought, wow, I really learned from my mom how to be an American. Even before I was an American, we had green cards. It was really at the height of the moment when we were, again, I've known about these stories, but there is something that happens when you hear a child crying, children, several crying for their mothers. And my mother called me and she was in tears. And I said, Ma, ¿qué pasa? And she said, ay, mijita, she said, is that I realize now is that those mothers who are crying because they have been, their children have been taken from me, she says, that could have been me. Oh. And I was like, what? And she says, and those children who have been left behind, and put into cages, she's, that could have been you. And I really had just a moment of like, oh my God, because I always convinced, I was just like, you know, oh my God, ha ha ha, my mother stands up to this immigration agent, and what a weird dude that he would do that. Like, what's up with him? Like, what a strange, you know, like, what a fluke. And it's like, no, it wasn't a fluke.
It could have changed the whole course of your life.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, there's another story to be told. It's another book. But, you know, so what was that room in the Dallas airport? Where was he going to take me?
What was it like for your parents to leave their birthplace behind and say, we have to start a new life in Chicago?
Well, for my father, you know, this was very difficult because he really is, may he rest in peace, a very proud Mexican. See, he did not want to leave Mexico, but there wasn't the opportunity. He was also a nerd. My dad was born in Tampico, Mexico, and he was a nerd. He wanted to be a scientist, even though he became a medical doctor. He was devoted to research, to helping to create the cochlear implant, something that he, you know, he we couldn't even imagine that something would exist that could help some deaf people who choose to be able to hear, to have that opportunity. So he was circumspect. You know, his first, I write about his first experience coming by bus through Texas. You know, he's confronted, you know, he was like, wait, this is the democracy, the El Norte has the democracy, but now I have to choose if my bathroom is a colored bathroom or a white bathroom. So my dad, yeah, was circumspect. My mom was like, let's do this. This is exciting. Let's go to Chicago. And that's how we end up in Chicago. So I'm a Midwestern girl at heart.
We're talking with journalist Maria Hinojosa of the show Latino USA. Her new memoir is called Once I Was You. Do you have an immigrant story to tell? What has it been like for you to settle here? What do you want to ask Maria? It's 800-642-1234. We'll continue this conversation ahead on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show, and we are so honored to talk with Emmy Award-winning journalist Maria Hinojosa. In her family, journalists were more important than movie stars. She writes about her family gathering around the TV for 60 Minutes, every report more riveting than the one before it. It made Maria love journalists for their service and for challenging people in power. What do you want to say about U.S. immigration policy and detention facilities, family separation? What changes do you want? Conversation right here. It's 800-642-1234. And Maria Hinojosa, the anchor of Latino USA, stays with us. Maria, take us back to February 2019, and you're in the McAllen Airport. And this is how you open up your memoir, seeing this little girl from Guatemala. And what goes through you? What is that conversation like?
Thank you so much for asking. You know, people ask me, why did I decide to start my book with that story? And what people don't know is that I had finished the book already when I had to go back and write an introduction. And one of the great American writers, also from Chicago, Sandra Cisneros, who is a friend and one of my muses, said, you know, don't always write about the things that you remember. Write about the things that you wish you could forget or the things that you've already forgotten, tried to forget. And when I asked myself that question, this image of this little girl came into mind. And I was at an airport, the McAllen Airport. It was early in the morning. And I think people who are listening to this, if they think back to a time when they were flying, you know, before the pandemic, I mean, I haven't been on a plane since March, and I was usually on a plane, if not two or three, anytime in 1 week, for example. So if you saw a group of kids that you thought were like a Central American soccer team, except that all the kids looked really sad and mismatched, and they were all wearing badly fitted sweatsuits, then you were watching children who were, in my view, my definition of being trafficked. You know, this is the government who has taken these children. So in this moment, I see this little girl not exactly looking at me, but rather looking through me. And I have a lot of experience in airports, right? So when kids are there, they're usually rambunctious and playing and smiling, and they want to smile at you. And this little girl had nothing. And that's what drew me to her. And then I write that I was witnessing in real time in an airport one of the greatest modern horrors of the United States of America. The taking of children. And then I try to get close. I speak to her. And then in the end, I say in Spanish, so there was several kids, you know, ranging from the ages of like 5 to maybe 15. And then I just start speaking in Spanish, you know, and I just say in Spanish, ellos tienen el derecho de hablar con una periodista, you know, they have the right to speak to a journalist. And then I said, y ellos tienen que saber que no les tenemos, no, que los queremos aquí, you know, that we want them here. They have the right to know that people want to care for them, want to know that they are well taken care of, that we are not afraid of having them here, that we love them, that people love them. And then I say this to the little girl, and I say this to you because I want you to hear me, because I see you. I see you because once I was you. And that leads to this whole, like, wow, it's that this is you know, it's very new for many people. It's shocking what we are hearing in real time about what is happening in detention camps, concentration camps, facilities, you know. But this is not new. These things are not new. You know, the taking of children from their parents, I would say, began when the first settlers arrived here. And then, you know, and then when slavery began, they were taking children of enslaved mothers. So this is something that has happened in our country, and we need to see it. And everyone needs to own responsibility. We all need to become involved in this.
Maria, you are so emphatic when you say there is no such words as illegal immigrant, and those words will not be on Latino USA in your newsroom. How have you seen attitudes change on immigration?
I think the United States of America actually, like, really deeply does not have a problem. I mean, you know, overwhelmingly people, when you poll them, I don't know what the most recent poll, but, you know, upwards of 60-75% of Americans are like, you know what, let undocumented people regularize their situation, let them stay, like, they belong here. If they're not quote unquote criminals, that's a very difficult term, because, you know, because of laws that Bill Clinton signed, that George W. Bush used, that Barack Obama put on steroids, and that Trump then basically went insane. That is how, you know, if you write a bad check, it's now you're a criminal and you can be deported. What's that about? So this is not new, and it's not one party that's at fault, sadly.
We have journalist Maria Hinojosa with her new memoir, and we will be back with it. The memoir is called Once I Was You. News update is next. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show, and what an honor to spend the hour with journalist Maria Hinojosa. Her new memoir is called Once I Was You. Her family came to the U.S. in 1962, and each year they'd load up the station wagon and make a visit back to Mexico. And her father, who was a physician, had an American passport, and the rest of her family had green cards. And she writes that crossing back into the U.S. at the Texas border would depend on the Border Patrol agent's mood. What was it like for you to move to America and come of age in a new country? What do you want to ask Maria Hinojosa about U.S. immigration policy? Conversation is at 800-642-1234. Maria, I was so struck of your family through the years loading up the station wagon and then going across the border, but then coming back and just trying to talk with the Border Patrol and going through our border. And you write about that it being really up to the agent's mood. What did you mean?
It's really interesting. And thank you for taking me back to that part of the book. No one's actually brought that up. Yeah, we knew that when we were leaving Mexico, we were a Mexican family. My father and mother spoke with very thick Mexican accents. And we were pulling into the southern Texas. The immigration agents were, I would say, like 95% white, if not more. Many of them, I would say 98% of them were men. And many of them, to me, were very imposing. Now, sometimes we would pull up and we, you know, because you drive up, and because we had a loaded car, we would have to go to secondary just because we had suitcase. I mean, we were Mexicans driving back from Mexico. We had a lot of stuff. So they were always going to look at our car. And that was the thing. You'd have an agent who would come in. He'd smile. He'd say, hey, welcome back, folks. And be like, did you have a good time? Yes. And then there were other times when the agent would come, you know, strutting his power. And basically it was like, take everything out of your car. And we'd be like, what? And he'd be like, take everything out of your car. every suitcase, every blanket, every pillow, every book, everything. And those were the times when you realized, yeah, this, like, wow, okay, I'm a part of this country, but I'm not. And really, I hadn't. I think I really need to write about that because I'm so vividly remembering the feeling of just feeling powerless and angry. And I guess it's interesting because this is the kind of trauma that I think we need to be talking a lot more about because these kinds of things, they do live in our bones. And I'm sure that there are many people who have immigrant backgrounds in your state right now who are part of your network who are just kind of like, oh gosh, let me think back, and then suddenly you realize that it's. And by the way, life is good. So but there are these moments where you're like, wow, that was pretty intense. Like immigration has always been an issue and it needn't be that way. Imagine if everybody was like from the New York Times or Washington Post, all of the local statewide papers were writing headlines that said, immigrants, growing our economy by such and such percent. Immigrants, now bringing multiple languages to the state of Wisconsin. Immigrants, bringing incredible food opportunities. Immigrants, oh my God, imagine all the new love interests that you can have in your life. Oh my God, like imagine if that's what we saw, not just in the textbooks and in the Statue of Liberty, but actually documenting the truth, which is that we are all of those things. We do bring all of those things to this country, but why is it that we're not? It's kind of like a Statue of Liberty. We need more than that.
Maria, your father, a prominent physician researcher, but living grant by grant, living grant to grant, not getting tenure. Did your parents ever reach a moment when they felt like they were Americans and they were really secure, in this choice that they made?
It took for my father, it took a while. I mean, I think towards the end of his life, he was able to sit back and say, wow, my kids, the four children have been a success. They are all settled. I'm able to retire in Mexico. So my father passed away at his home in Mexico, outside of Mexico City. But by now, the stability of the United States had allowed him to do that, but he loved Mexico. So I think he did come to terms with it. But the politics of the United States have always been complicated for those of us who were not born in this country. I think my mother was kind of, the way she engaged with the politics was becoming a practitioner of democracy, even though she couldn't vote. She took us to demonstrations because I was growing up in the late 60s and 70s. So we saw that and very political. And I think that she was much more resolved. She also became, a national activist for survivors of domestic abuse. And so she really came into her power as a woman, because in Mexico she didn't graduate from high school. So then this country did offer her so much. And I think she was more kind of, and still is just very o more open and loving. My father, a little bit more circumspect. And honestly, considering what we're living through right now, and that the litmus test is, what divides people is, were you born in this country or not? I mean, that's horrific. I think my father was very prescient in many ways, sadly.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Maria Hinojosa, the host of Latino USA. Her new memoir is called Once I Was You, and it was released this month. Maria, I want to talk about your journalism for a moment and finding your voice, because you lacked that confidence as you were in college and looking for internships and even growing up in high school and going to the lab school. How did you relate to your editors and an editor accusing you of having a Latino agenda? I think we're having some difficulty hearing Maria. Are you
Oh,
there?
sorry. Here I am. Here I
Okay.
am.
Yeah.
Several Latina journalists have actually asked me, like, were you really the first? You were really the first? And it's like, yeah. And they were like, what's that like? And I'm like, well, look, I was really happy to have a job. That was the primary thing. I understood I think I understood privilege. That's one of the things that happened. I had enough class consciousness, even though my family was not wealthy, but I could see wealth. I went to the University of Chicago High School, so wealth was all around me. But I understood that even though we didn't have wealth, I had privilege, and that is the privilege that allowed me to really push through those uncomfortable moments in the newsroom when I was the first, the only one. But it gave me the opportunity to understand that if you will, my otherness, it was the thing that had to define me. Like there's no way to try to be like everybody else with a name like Maria Hinojosa. There's just no way. Like it's not. So then I was like, well, then I'm gonna be Maria Hinojosa. That because that's who I am. Like in my family, that I'm Maria Hinojosa. Actually, my family calls me Malu or Malulis, but that's how I handled it. And that's what I say to young journalists now and to journalists across the board who are very frustrated, is that we need you. The world of a journalist, as you know, is not easy, but nothing is easy. But this is more than a job. This is a passion, and we have a responsibility to own our voices as journalists who are telling the American story from our perspective. So I'm really glad I didn't give up.
You've reported on detention camps, in your reporting through the Bush and Obama administrations. What can you tell us about the size, the nature of these camps, and how have they changed over the decades?
Well, usually when journalists do exposés about horrific things, they get better or places close down. I've been reporting about the horrors of these immigration detention camps for over a decade, for several decades, and they get worse. I mean, back in 1986, when I went to the very first detention facility, it was then among the immigrants called El Corralón, which means the corral, because you were put out to pasture like cows. I'm being very graphic because that it was that there was no place to be except under the sun with your orange jumpsuit. Now, in the year 2020, the place where immigrants and refugees, and people with green cards, who, by the way, have been living in the States for years and get caught smoking a joint, for example, they will end up not out in the sun, in the blazing sun, but they're put in what immigrants and people call La Hielera, which is the ice box. This is a calculated form of torture that leaves no marks. I'm being very graphic because I need people to understand this is happening today. It's happening right now. There are detention facilities in the state of Wisconsin, and if there are not facilities that stand alone, then the private prisons that run these immigration camps rent space out of your county jail and pay into your coffers. So we are now tied into a business model that is depending on scooping up immigrants, again, with green cards or without, and holding them. And again, the litmus test is the differences between me and you is that I wasn't born here, so I could end up in one of these places. I'm a citizen, but that is what it is about. And while we know, American citizens have ended up in these places, and I'm sure some people are wondering, well, where is my birth certificate? That's where we've gone. So the immigration story doesn't just impact me; it impacts everyone in this country. Everyone.
Maria, thank you for joining us.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you. I appreciated being here. And yes, please read Once I Was You.
Maria Hinojosa, anchor and executive producer of Latino USA, airs Tuesday evenings at 10 on the Ideas Network. Her new book is called Once I Was You. This is the morning show on the Ideas Network.
In weather for the next few days, some patchy fog in the north today, then sunny skies across the state with highs in the upper 70s. Wednesday, continued sunny, but the north might get some afternoon thunderstorms, highs in the mid to upper 70s. Thursday, partly sunny and breezy in the north, a mix of sun and clouds with a chance of rain and thunderstorms elsewhere in Wisconsin, highs from the mid-60s to the mid-70s. And on Friday, partly sunny in the north, mostly sunny in the rest of the region, and highs in the mid-70s. It's WPR.
ICE has a mission to protect America from cross-border crime and illegal immigration. Most of its detention centers are run for profit by private companies. An investigation is now underway into allegations that female detainees were given hysterectomies against their will. ICE says that's not true. So what's going on? Next time on 1A.
This morning at 9 on the Ideas Network.